This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, welcome back, Lucha Luscious. This is Timothy Robert Buckner here on Lucha Undead. Get to know the, I guess, PTBN, PWO. This is a weird one for me. I know that you do another podcast, but I don't know if you're on any like network or website off the top of my head. But we're joined by Maxwell Baumbach.
That's correct. Yeah, Baumbach, however you want to say it, is completely fine. Even within my own family, there's no consensus on the correct pronunciation. So
that's German, right? That's a German name.
Yes. Yeah, it's German.
Is it actual? Is it an actual, like, you have German heritage, and that's.
Yes. My grandfather moved over here. My great grandfather moved over here in like 1908, something like that, I think.
That's cool.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was prior to the rise of Nazism, thankfully. Before that, but yeah, it means. I think it means like tree river, so like I'm basically related to Justin Timberlake.
Nice.
Which is, you know, that's a good thing. But yeah, that's it is super German.
Yeah, I noticed the names with like BAU or BE. Like I think Tim, your name is German too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's why I asked, because my name doesn't actually denote any German heritage. It was an assumed last name when we came to America.
How'd you learn that?
Okay.
Yeah, that's why I asked as well, because my family's heritage is actually Irish, but they came over and
interesting.
Okay.
Took a German name because I guess it was easier to get work.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Did you find that out through Ancestry.com, or did you like ask a relative?
So one of my relatives found it out through Ancestry.com type thing. It was so I have an uncle. This is not how interviews are supposed to start. Anyway,
this is like fascinating.
This is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
So I have an uncle who was really obsessed with money, and he always made a big deal about that he was Jewish, and that our family's heritage was Jewish, and that he was a German Jew, and all this. And he's my grandfather's brother. And nobody else in the family was Jewish except for him. But he was saying, like, oh, it comes from our history and our lineage, blah, 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 all this. And then he played in the stock market kind of before even before the dot-com bubble kind of burst. And so his favorite thing to always say, because my family's pretty rural, honestly, from that side of my family, their background. His favorite kind of saying was, I can't spell $1 million, but I could write you a check for it. That was like his favorite thing to say. But so he was like a millionaire and all this. And eventually he looked into it and found out all that history that we weren't actually German. We're actually Irish and all this other stuff. So he actually found out that like he wasn't Jewish. He had converted or like officially went to the church and done all this stuff to be Jewish. And then now he's not.
Wow.
Or at least his lineage was not coming from like a Jewish backing. He's just, I guess, spiritually Jewish now. But yeah, that was how we kind of found out. He told us the whole story. I guess people, they were coming over from Ireland. I guess it was about work, and it was also about that they had possibly done some illegal activity in Ireland. I've heard it say that they had stolen, like they had ransacked castles from Irish royalty. They had stolen property. And we're kind of on the run from that, and that's why they came over and decided. I honestly would assume it was probably more likely that they were just like, hey, Irish people can't get work. Let's just pretend like we're German.
They ransacked Irish kids. Always after the Lucky Charms, huh, Tim?
Exactly. The other thing is that there's a famous quote, and I heard this once. This is more just about my family history. That there was a Buckner who was, god damn, I don't know what he was doing. He was working on like the rail lines in the early on, when they were building the original rail lines in America.
Uh-huh.
And he had said, once we get done here, I'm going to move up to Alaska where the nights can last for 3 or 4 months at a time. And I'm going to sleep in until the middle of the next day still.
Okay.
Essentially saying that he's working so hard, he's going to sleep for like 7 months straight.
Nice, nice, nice.
And that's like, that's my family history.
That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, I guess.
That stuff, no, I find that stuff pretty fascinating. I'm glad Maxwell shares in that.
So, yeah. So, Maxwell,
Yeah.
People might know you by a different name, not one that was, I guess, assumed because you couldn't get work. Or maybe it kind of was. It was assumed because of work, right?
It's well, yeah, it's actually weird because there's some people that still will refer to me as Mark, and not in the typical sense that you call a wrestling fan Mark, but because that was my wrestling commentary name for several years. So yeah, I was Mark Maxwell on the twitter.com for a long time as well. And over the last like 8 months, it's been weird kind of transitioning back to just being Maxwell again, but yeah.
And you were doing commentary and also helping kind of write, or I don't know, you know, I don't
So I did a bunch of stuff. So I did commentary for a couple of years just on like the Chicago indie scene as a whole. And then toward like the end of 2015, started to contribute to the booking side of freelance wrestling and indie in Chicago. It's a really great promotion. Check it out if you're not familiar. It's where Mustafa Ali came from, is kind of a good good kind of indicator as to the quality of the product and what they're all about. So I started to kind of contribute to the booking side of things there midway through 2015, toward the end of 2015, and then basically booked it through 2016 and kind of put a bow on my, in air quotes, career in independent wrestling at the end of 2016.
Okay. And for, I guess, for myself and people who don't know, what's the, let's say, like, what's the behind the scenes hierarchy of freelance? Who would you say is like the owner? Who's the, the top dog? All that.
I mean,
kind
I think
stuff.
It's I think it's pretty much out there. Matt Nix is the owner, along with somebody else who's who is an owner of the promotion as well, but isn't like public facing, and no one outside of the company really knows about them. But I mean, people in the local scene know who he is, but I don't know that he like, wants his name out there or anything. But they're the ownership group. They're really great. Like I could not have asked for better people to work with. So Nick started it, and then his partner came on board like two or three shows in, and the promotion grew kind of a lot faster than they expected it to. And then that's kind of where I came in to help out with the booking stuff, was basically to offload some of their burden of all the stuff that they were already doing.
Oh, okay. So that was what kind of brought you on. I was going to ask that next.
So I was doing commentary, and me and Matt Nix, like to this day, are really good friends. So I had, you know, I'd like hang out with him outside of shows and at other indie shows in the area that we were both booked on. So I'd been pitching ideas and stuff, cause I've always had the creative side of wrestling was always that appealed to me. I'm not a matches guy. Like I know that sounds weird, cause like a lot of people are like, oh, like I want to see this match and this match. Like to me, it's the stories that draw me to wrestling. So I had always kind of pitched a lot of ideas, and then in 2016, they were going to go from running bi-monthly shows to monthly shows. So they wanted to have a lot more continuity and things like that to kind of keep people hooked from month to month, just because there was going to have to be a lot more nuance to the product at that point. So I'd been kind of contributing ideas here and there. Nick's had a lot going on and was starting to get, I mean, he's like booked everywhere this year, but at that time, his bookings were starting to pick up. So he had a lot going on. The other owner had a lot going on as well, because he has a very interesting shoot job where he has to travel a lot and things like that. So since I'd contributed some ideas that were pretty good, they kind of let me just take over the book.
Okay. And yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to hear that coming from you, because I think that for that period of time when you were, I guess, doing the booking, and that's another, I guess, another question, how involved was it really? I mean, were you the end all be all what you said, or you were kind of working in conjunction with Matt Nix and possibly the other owner there and coming up with ideas?
It was always a team thing. Like there's a lot of stuff that they came up with that worked really well, or like other ideas. But I mean, I got almost everything I wanted, like almost every single thing that I wanted, I got. And the things that I didn't 100% get were made better by them or by performers in terms of working with them on ideas for them. So it was basically, I was coming up with a lot of the ideas and cards. Nix was still handling a lot of he basically handled all the financials and would give me like, hey, here's what the budget's looking like. Here's what the talent's looking like. here's who I have booked on these shows. Like, go from there. You know, let me know who's getting booked, like who's getting over, you know, and we can, you know, make sure that we have dates for them so that they know they're on every show, so that we can, you know, sort of lock people up if they're doing well for us and that sort of thing. So it's basically me kind of working in conjunction with both of them, as well as talent, which I think is the biggest thing that most indie bookers don't do, is a lot of them will just kind of do what they want and not inform talent. And that's, pretty bad, I would say.
Yeah, right. I mean, you always hear the stories about the old school, the guys who are really good. They're driving in the cars talking about what they're going to do next, how they're going to do their next promos, all this stuff. And if they have no clue where they're going, they're not going to put that extra effort into their character for you.
Well, yeah, and I just think it, in general, like in the independent wrestling landscape, if someone feels like they want to be at a promotion and they're excited to be there, and they feel like they're a part of the company and they're not just being paid to go out and perform on a professional wrestling show, I think you're going to get a better performance out of them too. Like, I think it goes deeper than that too. Like, I think it's just in terms of the quality of everything that you're going to get out of it, it's going to be better if you try to work with people. So it makes it more enjoyable for them. It makes it better for the show. I just think that's the best way to go about handling your business.
But yeah, I would say, from like the 1 year anniversary, and I don't know if you were involved yet with the company at that point.
I was on commentary from like the first show, but
I guess I mean behind the scenes.
It was like shortly after that I started to kind of pitch ideas and stuff like that.
Okay, because from like the 1 year anniversary, and I'm not gonna say that it's gone down, but I would say up until at least like the first freelance versus CZW show. Beyond that. Freelance was so buzzy and was in a lot of ways like the best written show
company. Okay. Yeah,
like on the indies for sure. Mm-hmm. Because at that point Progress was hitting a pretty strong lull and they had kind of held that banner for a while, and maybe even CWF you could argue, but you guys, I mean, were killing it at that time.
Yeah,
and to know that like you were kind of a big part of that creative process is really impressive.
Yeah, and I think it's I think it's kind of surprising to a lot of people, because I put forth such a doofusy persona online, and I like to kind of joke around and whatever. I don't take myself very seriously, but at the end of the day, I mean, I care deeply about professional wrestling, and part of the reason I left wrestling was because of the amount of time and attention that we were putting into everything. I was very cognizant about details and making sure that everything that we did was being tied up. I hate loose ends. I hate when things are built and then they don't go anywhere. I hate lack of explanation. I need everything to make sense. So because of that, I mean, that's why that is that's who I am as a person. I'm a perfectionist. I'm a very anxious person. And that's also part of the reason I made the decision to get out of wrestling, was because, I was putting a lot of time into it, and it was incredibly fun. But I felt myself starting to burn out, and I didn't want to be burnt out and kind of be in the way of the product, because I felt like it still had room to grow. And if I wasn't going to be able to put everything into it, I didn't feel like I deserved to be there. So that's kind of why I stepped aside.
Yeah, it's one of the it's honestly, I think, a pretty common, not just in wrestling, but in everything, kind of catch-22 when it comes to creative processes, where the people who care the most are the ones who really can't commit to it the most, because every little thing just starts to become such an obsession.
Yeah, and I don't mean to say this in a way that's like derogatory toward other people in wrestling either, but there are a lot of people in pro wrestling who live just for pro wrestling, and that's kind of their life, and that's, you know, what they care about. And like, I have a lot of other interests. I host a podcast. I love basketball. I love mixed martial arts. I have a really good job that I really enjoy. Like, I have a lot going on outside of, I had a lot going on outside of freelance, and I was like, I don't, not that like I don't need this, but like, hey, like this is becoming something that's really stressful and not enjoyable for me, and I don't need to have this. And I always said too, like, I never really had set goals in professional wrestling for myself. My goals were always like, I'd like to help people get on the map. I would like to help people get to the next level. I'd like to help people, you know, get, I'd like to give people a platform so that they can get booked other big like places like that. Those are always kind of my goals. I never wanted to work for WWE or anything like that. So I basically got everything I wanted out of wrestling and it stopped being fun. And I decided to call it a day.
Adrian, I would feel like this is a lot of stuff that you probably don't know much about. Do you want to, do you have any questions or anything you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, sort of. I was, kind of thinking about, when it comes to stories and wrestling and stuff, is there like a formula that has to be followed? Like how with, for example, in a romantic comedy, you have like guy meets girl, guy falls in love, they break up, they realize they're good for each other, blah, blah. You know, like there's a certain formula you have to follow. Is there a certain formula you have to follow like with wrestling stories? Like
for... No, I mean, I like to kind of freewheel things. I like things to sort of, I like everything to kind of feed into the next thing. And I think that if, like, Shug D was one of my favorite people to work with. And it, like, if you kind of like look at his arc, everything, I like there to be continuity. I don't like guys to flounder on a wrestling show. Like, I feel like that's where guys like lose momentum and stop getting over is when they're just existing on a wrestling show. Like if you look at Shug D, he was built up through 2015 to have this title shot. He loses it and then he builds his way back up and he's going to get a title shot again. And then he doesn't get it. He loses the number one contenders match. And then Christian Rose comes out and beats him down. And then that set the table for him to kind of go on this skid where he can't get it all together. And Christian Rose has gotten in his head that because he's this nice guy, he doesn't have the killer instinct. He doesn't have, you know, what it takes to become a top guy. And then he finally overcame that. But it was essentially, there were several points of this storyline, but Shug D had one character arc, essentially, yeah, that just kind of continued on. So for me, I don't think I looked at as much as a story process, as much as who are these characters, where are they going, what are their what are their motivations, and whose paths would realistically cross. And that's why I really liked the program that we did with Shug D and Christian Rose, is because they do have very juxtaposing ideologies as real life human beings and as characters on a wrestling show that I thought, you know, these people would not get along. So why not make that a program? And we've kind of established that within our own universe. So let's go in that direction. I think there needs to sort of be a freedom to it. So I think trying to put it into a defined structure is maybe not the best and easiest way to go about it too. I think it would make it a little bit more difficult creatively as well.
Yeah, so that sounds like a very dynamic storytelling. Like it kind of happens as you go, kind of on the fly, just depending on the circumstances. Not so much pre-written or pre-planned, like you said, because that
exactly. Yeah,
that's really interesting. And I never really realized that it could be so dynamic, but it makes sense, you know.
And I think one of the biggest mistakes that you see a lot of promoters make too is, they'll come up with a storyline and then that storyline will happen. And that sounds like an odd statement to make. but you need to be able to adjust.
Yeah.
You know, everything's not going to go perfectly. You know, sometimes maybe the heel will start to outshine the face too much. Yeah. And you got to zag back and you got to find a way, okay, you know, what can I do to get more sympathy over toward the baby face? Maybe I need to have, instead of the next show, the heel coming out and attacking the babyface and beating him down, maybe he tries to come out and attack the babyface, but the babyface stays up because we need to get, you know, we need to make sure that he stays over and that the crowd doesn't see him as a loser. Yeah. I think flexibility and maintaining flexibility and feeling out the crowd at each stage in the process is something a lot of promotions miss the boat on, because people come up with an idea and they love their idea and they're married to their idea and that's what it's going to be. And that's not always the best thing for the performers. And ultimately, your job as a booker is not about making your stories happen. It's about getting the performers to maximum overness based on where they are on the card.
Yeah, so. And all that stuff sounds like a true underdog story. Because what is it? Everybody mm-hmm. always likes a good underdog story. And it sounds mm-hmm. like in wrestling, there's a lot of plot twists and like, you know, the plot thickens and there's character arcs and all that stuff. So it really is like watching, like, it really is. It sounds like it's watching like a very interesting, like, action movie show type thing. Because that's what it is, yeah. Right? At the end of the day, that's really what.
Yeah, we wanted. Yeah, like, and like our thing with freelance is like in. I heard on another podcast recently, people were talking about how like every promotion needs to have their niche. And like what I wanted freelance to be like, because freelance is like it's a bar show. Like we're running in like these punk bars. Was like, I want it to be like a fun bar experience, but I want it to be like, I feel like the most fun that you have, like if you are out with your friends and you go see a movie, like it's fun, at least for me, I feel, to go to like an emotionally jarring, like kind of like fucked up movie. Like it's fun to go to a movie where it's like crazy. You leave the theater and you're like, whoa, like I couldn't believe like when this happened and this happened. Like I wanted to give people like a really good time, but also have that be an emotional experience. Cause I feel like that's something that's really missing from wrestling a lot of places. Is that, and like I said earlier, I'm not a match guy. A lot of these companies now, they're just matches. And that's fine. Like there's obviously a market for that. But there weren't a lot of people that were kind of catering toward like, hey, you can come to the show. It'll be a really good time with your friends. But also like it's going to be an emotional experience. And I feel like that was something that we were doing that nobody really else was doing, at least in the States.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Before, before talking to you today, I didn't realize how much storytelling really plays into wrestling, right? I mean, it makes sense because you have to have all these characters and all these plot lines going. And how do you guys keep up with that? I feel like I would get so confused after a while. Because I know, Tim, you watch a lot of wrestling, but it's like, how do you keep up with all the different story arcs that are going on? Like, it sounds like it would just get kind of confusing after a while, unless you're like, just like really, I don't know, paying attention, I guess.
I think part of it too is like that's where the commentary comes in. Is like because I was doing commentary the entire time I was booking as well. It's like it's my job as the commentator to catch you up. Yeah. So like during the first part of the matchup when guys are just kind of exchanging basic holds, it's not going to be too important that a guy's in a wrist lock, to be honest. So like when someone's in a wrist lock, I can kind of go over and explain the story and what's been going on to kind of set that up. So even for like new viewers, because we were in like a period of rapid growth. If you're new to the product and you haven't been watching it and this is your first time seeing a freelance show, you know, you're going to be caught up and you're going to be made privy to everything because of the commentary.
I could sit here and probably talk to you about freelance in general for like an hour. No problem. Yeah. But we are supposed to talk about you, I think, a little bit more. So let's talk about that. Like before you got into commentary, I have been told that you had been doing like a kind of some wrestling podcasts early on. In fact, a podcast that hasn't come out yet. We actually talk about it, but I was told to maybe ask you about that, ask you about your history as a college radio personality. So what was kind of your background when it came to, I guess, the audio media? Why were you attracted to radio and then commentary?
Yeah, so it all starts like with wrestling. I was a fourth generation wrestling fan. My grandpa's mom used to like go to the carnival back in the day and like watch like old school, like legitimate carnival wrestling. He was a wrestling fan. My dad was a wrestling fan. So I kind of grew up on wrestling and I knew I wanted to do something with it, from the time I was a kid. So I, knew I wanted to do something with wrestling. My ultimate dream always was to book, but I'm like 6'5", like I'm a big dude. And I was like, oh, I'll be a wrestler. And then that will be the pathway to becoming a booker. Cause you can't just like become a booker. So I was like, oh, I'm going to train to be a wrestler. So when I was 17, I was in good shape. Like I was, I played basketball, volleyball and, did track and fields. Like I was a big dude. I was like 6'5", probably like 270, but pretty thick. Build at the time. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go train. So there was a wrestling school 15 minutes away from where I lived in Elmhurst, Illinois. And it was a Lucha Libre wrestling school. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go to this place. I'm going to train to be a wrestler. It's going to be fantastic. So I ended up training there and it was authentic Lucha Libre. So the trainer did not speak any English at all. So I was going to this building in Villa Park and it was basically everything was either being translated to me or I would just watch it and then do it. So I trained at this place for like 4 months. And then one day toward the end of a training session, like all these like American looking people come in, like there's a couple black guys, some white guys. I'm like, what the hell are they doing here? This is the Lucha Libre wrestling school. Like what's going on? And as soon as we finished the training, I get out of the ring, and one of them's like, oh, yeah, there's, like, an American wrestling school that runs out of here, too. So I trained in the wrong language for 4 months, and then I kind of hung out with those guys a lot. And Bryce Benjamin, B. Rice of the N-Words and Freelance Wrestling Tag Team, he was one of the main people. Him and a guy, James Russo, who's a manager and promoted a lot of places. He was the first guy to ever give me a shot in commentary. They're basically like my wrestling parents. Like, they taught me almost everything I know. Like, they did a lot for me in wrestling. They kind of brought me up. And during that time, I kind of decided I didn't want to train. My track coach was not happy about me, like, coming to practices and, you know, limping around from wrestling training when I'd have to be in a meet the next day. So he was like, listen, like, you've got to pick. You either have to do track or wrestling. Like, you have to pick. I was not good enough to, I mean, I could have theoretically done like Division III track in college, but I wouldn't have, like, but I would have been bad. So I was like, I'm not going to be able to do track very long, but like, I could theoretically always do wrestling. So I chose track. But I hung around, the wrestling scene still, and, would set up the ring at shows. I, along with Andrew Schillinglaw of, Sports Entertainment Shrinks, started to do a podcast called BQ Radio, from a forum that we were both on when I think we were like 16 or 17. Cause there was some like free podcasting service that existed back then that is no longer around. So I did a show with him, and like, that was like my first like audio wrestling thing I ever did. And then I hosted a radio show in college. And then when James and Bryce found out I was doing that, that's when they got me doing commentary on wrestling shows.
Okay, and to be honest, my secret source was Andrew Schillinglaw. He actually was interviewed, and by the time people are listening to this, that interview will be out, I guess. It got lost in the ether and is coming out like a couple weeks later than it's supposed to.
Yeah.
So you will be after that. He told us about the old Busted Quad podcast.
Yeah, BQ Radio is fantastic. I feel like he remembers, his memory of that is a lot better than mine was. I remember there was a recurring joke that I wanted to marry Michelle McCool. Did he talk about that at all?
He mentioned that you were loving life with Michelle McCool.
Yeah. That was like, that's like the one thing I remember is like me being in love with Michelle McCool.
And I remember Simon, I've been told by Simon, I think that there was a joke that he was going to be a guest.
Yeah, Simon Fessenden was supposed to be the guest every week, but he'd never show up. And it was like, which was also the gag in ROH with Colt Cabana on Good Times, Great Memories, was that CM Punk was always going to be the guest. So he'd never show up.
I was thinking of on the Jimmy Kimmel show when it was Matt Damon always gets bumped every week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a solid gag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he also mentioned that I needed to ask you about on your college radio show having contestants who literally peed their pants. Now,
oh my God, yeah.
This seems like an interesting story.
Yeah, so I was legitimately banned from radio for a while. my freshman year of college, me and my friend Rob had a radio show called Rob and Max the Viking, because I look like a Viking. And it was the bus station bathroom with Rob and Max the Viking was the name of the show. And every week we would do some sort of contest or promotion, because we had a friend who worked at TGI Fridays and stole a shitload of gift cards from there. So we were giving away these stolen TGI Fridays gift cards. And one week we had to do a promotion, and we didn't have anything. Like, we had no idea for contests or anything like that. So we were like, I went to a small college. It was Concordia University Chicago in River Forest, Illinois. It's a school of like 1,500 people. So it's a small college. So like, if you were well-connected and had a radio show, everybody would listen to your radio show because there's nothing to do. So one week we're like, hey, if you come down to the radio station, you pee in your pants, you know, we'll give you $20 and a Friday's gift card. And like, we just like said it as a joke, and nobody did it. And then the next week we like doubled down, and we were like, somebody's got to claim the prize. Like, somebody has to come to the studio and pee in their pants. And we like really laid on the pressure thick. And my friend Joel texted me. He was in my wedding. Like, he's like one of my best friends to this day. He texted me and he was like, hey, if me and two other people come and pee in our pants, do we each get $20 in a Friday's gift card, or do we have to share it? And we were like, you have to share it. Even though we probably had more money and gift cards available, we just were like, no, you guys got to share it. So he's like, all right, we'll be there in 15 minutes. So him and two of his friends came down. He was like completely sober, but the other two were like high off their ass. They come to the radio station, and we filmed it too, because like, we had like a congruent like Facebook page and all this stuff. And they came in gym shorts and towels, and they all just start peeing in their pants. And then I'm laughing hysterically because just like watching a grown man pee in their pants is hilarious, let alone like three grown men at the same time peeing in their pants. So I'm laughing hysterically. And then I inhale to catch my breath. And I just get these urine fumes. And it's the most disgusting thing I've ever smelled in my life. And I immediately throw up.
Oh.
So now we go back on the air and we talk about people like peeing in their pants and vomiting. And like we post this video on our Facebook page and everyone at the college shares it and this and that. And the school administration was very not happy. And I guess I had no idea about this, but I guess based on how they'd set up with FCC registration, like they weren't, you like weren't supposed to even like be able to say like PP on the air. So me being like, oh, this guy's pissed their pants and I vomited. Like, it was very not okay for how we were structured with them. So they were like someone else listened that wasn't like, I guess there were people in the local area that were listening and whatever. So we could have gotten in trouble with the FCC. So that was the last episode of Robin Max the Viking, the bus station bathroom with Robin Max the Viking. But I ended up getting another radio show my sophomore year, and they just like swept it under the rug and pretended like it never happened. But we didn't do the whole like people peeing in their pants thing again. So
fantastic. Adrian, You had a run in with the FCC before, huh?
I did. When was that? Refresh my memory.
You came close to it, or you could have, right? Didn't you let something slip on the air before that you shouldn't have?
Oh, well, technically it was a Maroon 5 song that has one cuss word in it. But it's funny because the music that I was playing, that song included, that came from a CD that was approved by our news director. So in reality, he approved a bunch of songs for us to play on the air without checking to make sure that they didn't have, you know, cuss words in them. Like he didn't give us the radio edits of each song. He gave us just, I think he just downloaded them off of, you know, off the internet and just put them on a CD and then just gave it to us and said, here, you can only play these songs. So it's pretty funny because, you know, I would have assumed that, hey, if the boss is giving you these songs to play, that they're probably fine to, you know, to put on air. But, yeah, apparently nothing ever happened, though. Nothing ever happened. Like, the FCC didn't come down on anybody as far as I know.
And I think that's the thing. It's like they have, like, so many stations that they can make so much more money off of. And, like, at least in my situation, like, We're small potatoes, so.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I mean, it's a government agency. Do you guys really think that a government agency is going to, like, actually do their job?
Yeah. Like, if you've been to a DMV.
Exactly. Like, you know what's great, though, is that, like, they just opened a DMV down the street from where we live, and I don't think many people know about it because my wife went there the other day, and she was in and out in, like, 20 minutes.
That's nice. I went to the DMV. I had to go to the DMV last week because I just moved, and like it was not nearly as bad as I expected. Yeah. I was shocked that it went so smoothly.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. They always have such a dead, soulless eyes, people at the DMV. What's up with that?
What? It is very weird. They all act like they're just like, yeah, completely checked out.
They make good money, don't they? Like they get paid. They get paid well.
I have no concept of how much money they make.
I think they make decent money, but I know for sure that they have like good benefits.
Okay.
Because, like, it's a government gig, so like they had a decent amount of vacation time and.
Yeah, if they have to deal with so many assholes, though,
I bet. That's true.
That's true.
But somebody once told me, and take this with a grain of salt. Somebody once told me a long time ago that if you get a job at the DMV, you technically like qualify to get like an associate's degree in business or something like that. I don't know how much truth there is to that.
Wait, what?
But yeah, like somehow working at the DMV qualifies you to have like an associate's degree in like business or something like that. Now that sounds like BS, but
I feel like that sounds.
Somebody told me this
getting hired by the DMV is the same.
Yeah, it's like the equivalent of doing like an associate's program for business. Maybe I'm wrong, but I could have sworn somebody told me that a long time ago.
That feels like it has to be super wrong. Like that can't. This one loophole that makes every college give you an associate's degree.
DMV people hate him.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so great.
This is very, very weird. So I had a pretty nice DMV interaction a couple weeks ago, but that's neither here nor there. How about Adrian, do we want to take a break, you think?
Yeah, let's take a little break, and when we come back, you know, we'll continue on.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when shopping online and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Coming soon from the creative minds of the Place to Be Nation Pop Network, the audio adaptation that no one was asking for, but everyone deserved. Place to Be Nation Pop Comic Book Theater presents Watchmen, an audio feast for your ears. Thrill to the exploits of the comedian.
These are demons. It's an intergalactic invasion into this space through people. They have sexual rituals, some of the most ancient Egyptian rituals, where they believe they are possessed by entities, space aliens.
Silk Spectre.
Good. Hey, licking your finger, it's like licking a battery. It's all sort of...
Night Owl.
Well, you know how it goes. Sometimes I come down here and sit around a little bit, think about the times when we were making the towns, doing the drugs, fucking the rats.
Dr. Manhattan.
Clearly you don't really care about what stimulates me.
Ozymandias.
Puta, the Soviets, Vietnam, anyone? Mila Jovovich?
and Rorschach.
But what it doesn't change is the fact, and this is something we can all agree on, that all of the whores and politicians will look up and they'll shout, "Save us, JR," and I'll look down and I'll whisper, "Ma."
You won't believe your ears. You won't believe the dark places your imagination will take you. Featuring cameos from some of your PTBN favorites.
Hmm, baby, that's quite a drop, I said.
Oh, they're just paying me to handle monsters in outer space? No, no.
Maybe it was a couple of guys and they overpowered him.
He cometh up and swerve, cut down like a flower.
Fly me to the moon, let me fuck amongst my star. Oh, I guess Dr. Osterman finally arrived.
It's Watchmen, the greatest graphic novel of all time, as you've never heard it before, transformed into the most self-referential collection of in-jokes on this or any other medium. Only from the hard-traveling fanboys and Place to Be Nation Pop.
And we're back, and Maxwell Bomback, if that is your real name, I do have a question I was meant to ask before we even started, or once we started the show, and that is, are you now, or have you ever been a member of the PWO board?
I am not, and I have never been.
Ah,
okay. I will admit, however, I do lurk the PWO board.
You got
so if any of you haters are going to be talking shit, I will read it and feel bad about myself.
Got to get those rage points up by reading some ridiculous takes from LP, right? That's the consensus of the PWO board. Or...
I have to ask, though, why do you lurk? I mean, why not just make an account and just contribute or comment?
I feel like I'm just sort of a lurker in general. Like, I lurk a few different pro wrestling message boards and don't post on any of them. And I used to be like a big message board guy back in the day. And I feel like I more do it for information purposes because I don't get to watch as much wrestling as I would like to a lot of the times. So it's a way of, I can basically gather people's takes and be like, okay, well, I agree with this guy about like these people. So if he says this about, Lucha Underground Season 3, then I'm sure it's probably true. Like, it's basically an easy way for me to kind of catch up on things and get sort of an insight into the things that I'm not really paying too close of attention to.
Yeah, I find that funny because, like, you know, I go on Reddit a lot and I comment a lot on Reddit. I probably shouldn't because, you know, I say some things that I shouldn't sometimes. But, like, I know that most of the traffic that Reddit gets is just people who lurk. People who, they don't even create accounts. They just lurk. They just, like, browse all the default subreddits. You know, and that's it. You know, there's no upvoting or downvoting or commenting or sharing posts. It's just people. And I'm just trying to get in the side of the mind of a lurker. Like, there almost needs to be, like, a special Dateline NBC episode of getting inside the mind of a lurker.
It's mostly, like, laziness and just, I think I use message. I don't know. I feel like I just use message boards for, like, informational purposes.
Gotcha.
I just sort of a weird thing about me is that I'm, like, I love just getting information about things. So, like, I'll read Wikipedia pages during downtime at work.
Nice.
Like, I don't know. I like getting information. I feel like that's how I view message boards more as, like, I'm going to get information from people rather than I'm going to contribute and be a part of this community.
Yeah. That's my default way of looking people up on Google. I don't just type in someone's name into Google. I type in Wiki and then their name, so that the first result is their Wikipedia entry. Because it's a nice condensed version of who they are and what they're about. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So. But that's cool, though. It's like I said, I'm fascinated by getting into the mind of a lurker. So I just had to ask.
Maybe that needs to be a spinoff show, Adrian, where you interview lurkers about lurking.
Yeah. It'll be called Read Only. Like, you know, because yes. Like, you know how RAM is like read and write, but these people are just read only.
Yes. Like, wrong. Adrian, did you have a question? Did you have something you wanted to throw out there?
Yeah, we're gonna bridge the you know, two halves of our show with the middle question that Tim has so eloquently developed. And that question is, Maxwell, are you allergic to anything?
I mean, it hasn't been diagnosed, but I personally feel that I'm allergic to people who don't believe that Chris Benoit murdered his wife and son and inserted all responsibility.
Crispin, hold on.
Yeah, but
who is this person?
I don't know. I don't really think. Oh, no. There was something I was allergic to. It was like something weird that was in one specific medicine that I took because I had glandular swelling. Like my saliva glands got swollen.
Oh,
man. It was
man.
The worst.
That does not sound fun. Like,
yeah, it was right after my freshman year of college, like first week of summer, I had like no saliva. I was like, what's going on? And my face was all puffy and I had to take some medicine for that. And I did have an allergic reaction to it because I broke out into hives and they were like, oh, it's only in like this medicine. So it's not something you really have to worry about. And then I just took the generic version of it that didn't have that and I was fine. So I'm allergic to something, but they legitimately told me not to worry about it because they that didn't know of any other medicine that it was in.
Yeah, you said glandular swelling.
A crippling allergy, huh?
No, it was just I just had hives and that was it. Like, and it wasn't even bad. Like, it wasn't like, I know. I guess you can get them like in your throat from taking like certain things, or if you eat something that you're allergic to. Apparently, like you can get like throat swelling. I didn't have anything like that. I just I looked horrifically sunburnt, but I just had hives.
Do you ever find that you eat certain fruits and then your tongue gets kind of numb? Does that ever happen to you guys?
That happens to me with dairy products, I found.
Okay.
The dairy products for some reason make my tongue feel numb.
Specifically like cheese or milk or ice cream or what exactly?
Milk and ice cream. It's more, it's like, yeah, it's like the more liquidy it is, the more likely it is to happen.
Yeah, I don't know if it's I'm allergic or if it's slightly acidic. I think some fruits and veggies are slightly acidic, right? Because I like the other day I ate some celery. I ate a bunch of celery, and I felt like that same sort of numbness on my tongue, like I was allergic to it or something. But I wasn't. I don't think I am. Mm-hmm. But maybe it always
happens to me with walnuts, and I for a long time thought that that's just what happens when you eat walnuts.
Uh huh.
And then I think I've realized now that I'm allergic.
Oh. I realized the hard way that I'm allergic to cats or cat hair. Ooh. Specifically.
What was the hard way for that?
Because we went to an adoption center and we were playing with this cat. You know, he like rubbed his, you know, how cats do, like they'll like rub themselves all over you and stuff. And then like we left and I was in the car and I just started getting like my nose got started getting really, you know, I started had to blow my nose. My eyes were getting all watery and stuff. And I was just getting like the sniffles, you know what I mean? So it's like, And I was just the cat that I had done. That's the only thing different I did that day. And whenever I am around cats, like especially a lot of them, if there's cat hair in the air and stuff, the pollen or whatever, not pollen, it's not pollen, obviously, but you know what I mean? It makes me get all like, you know, my eyes get all watery and my nose gets all, you know, like I have to blow my nose constantly. It's horrible. It's actually really bad, which sucks because I want a cat, but, you know, I can't. So it is what it is.
That is tough. So, yeah. Maxwell, you yes. brought it up there, and I talked about your non-crippling allergy, and it doesn't cut off your air supply.
If only Chris Benoit had stopped it crippling and not cut off people's air supplies.
Yes, so now let's talk about that allergy, because I did want to bring this up. You seem to have really adopted the Chris Benoit, not truther bandwagon, but the actual truth of Chris Benoit bandwagon and felt the need to push it out there as much. What's that based on?
It was sort of inspired by Twitter superstar Iron Gazi, if you've ever followed him on the twitter.com. He's not really a troll. I think that'd be unfair to say because he doesn't go looking for people, but he'll he for a while was tweeting out things about like, oh, like Tony Stewart murdered Kevin Ward with his race car and stuff like that. And then would just get people that, you know, were like, oh, no, Tony Stewart's innocent. And he'd be like, oh, well, is he a great race car driver or did he murder that man with his car? And like would just have these like ridiculous conversations with people. So I just started to tweet out that Chris Benoit murdered his wife and son, then skirted all responsibility. And then I started to slowly find Benoit truthers in people that, you know, thought he was framed or that he, you know, it doesn't matter and he should still be in the WWE Hall of Fame despite that. So then I started to, like, kind of look into it a little bit and, like, just find people that were tweeting about Chris Benoit and then, you know, informing them that he murdered his family. Because I don't know. It's very cut and dry to me. And I think it's fun to mess around with people who can't grasp such a simple reality, I suppose. And
it's so cut and dry. Then why did his Wikipedia article get updated? Hours
oh my
ago?
God. And it was from Stamford, Connecticut.
Yes.
I guess the other thing I like about it too is that it's a fun, easy card to play because it's a non-controversial take to have. No one's going to be upset at me for thinking that, you know, Chris Benoit killed his family. And additionally, if someone gets mad or, like, thinks it's a joke and that I'm joking about it and they're like, oh, you know, you shouldn't be making jokes about this, then I can lay down the, well, it sounds like you're more mad about me making a joke than you are about Chris Benoit murdering his family. So it's basically an impossible argument to lose. So it's a very fun thing to do for that reason as well.
That makes sense. I could get behind that quite a bit.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say it's a very fun double homicide suicide.
Yeah, it's enough. If we're talking about like entertaining murders, folks, no.
Jeez. But I mean the Benoit truther community is out there and it's kind of fucking weird.
Yeah, it's just odd to me that like I'm someone who likes wrestling so much that I paid to go to wrestling school.
Right.
So like I view like people in the wrestling business like I it's part of the reason I hate when people like use the word mark in a derogatory sense is because like people in the wrestling business are the biggest mark. So like I view myself as like one of the biggest marks. So like when I see people that like somehow think that wrestling is so important that it shouldn't matter that this guy killed his family because he was good at the fake play fighting sport. I can't wrap my head around that. And it makes me sad. And I do want there to be correction because I love wrestling more than a good chunk of the population on planet Earth. And I am even willing to say, like, hey, we shouldn't be celebrating this guy. He killed his family. And I think it's important to draw that line and make that distinction.
It's pretty definitely. Dark.
But where do you come down on Chris Benoit, I guess, in general, outside of being a murderer?
Yeah, so that's actually a good question, because I joke around about, like, Great Khali being better than him and things like that.
Yeah, like, who's your favorite wrestling murderer?
Yeah, Benoit 1, Snuka 2. And this surprises a lot of people. Chris Benoit, for a time, was my favorite wrestler. He was very good. I will say, though, in hindsight, like, I don't really enjoy his work that much. And I'm somebody who's very good at compartmentalizing. I know a lot of people are like, we can never watch a Chris Benoit match because of what he did. I have watched a lot of Chris Benoit matches since the Benoit tragedy happened. And I don't know if he just doesn't age that well, or if I think to me, part of it is that he was sort of like pushed by the internet community. It's like him and Eddie Guerrero are the best wrestlers in the world. And like, they may have been at the time, but I feel like Eddie is like miles ahead of him. I think Eddie is so much more entertaining. It's so much more charismatic that like, it's weird for me to go back and look at it and be like, why did I like Benoit more than Eddie? Like Eddie was way better. To me, at least. But I think he was a very good professional wrestler. I don't think he should have ever been a top guy. He did okay in his one title reign, but I don't think he's someone that you keep on top for very long because of his limitations as a promo, and his, you know, lack of crossover appeal and things like that. But I thought he was very good.
I think so. You say that, and I agree with you in a lot of ways, but I think that in a weird way, like what he did was working in the bigger sense when you talk about promos and all that other character stuff. Like, he's looked at as a guy who's he's terrible at character work and promo, but he's like the guy who his gimmick is I'm wrestle guy. And yeah. he did really good at it to where he got super over to where people said he's the best wrestler in the world, even if, like you said, it may not have been true. So in a way, he was a good character worker.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very meta nuanced. Yeah. I mean, I think there's certainly some truth to that. And I do think that, you know, would it have fit the Chris Benoit wrestler, the wrestling end of his character, to be a guy who comes out and cuts, you know, Chris Jericho type promos? You know what I mean? It did ultimately all fit and work in congruence. And that is part of why he succeeded to the level that he did. I think that's a fair opinion.
Yeah, but I don't disagree with you that he isn't a guy that you keep on the top for very long. But I think he pretty much got what he deserved in multiple senses.
Yeah. Well, I think he deserved to rot in prison, but
that's fair.
But I think that's a very good way to look at it. It's good. I think, especially back then too, where it was, you know, at least in most of the online communities, it was very like tall guys are bad, short guys are good, sort of a big part of the narrative. So there was sort of always this, like, you know, perpetual idea of the small guys are under pushed, the big guys are over pushed. That at the time, I'm sure people thought, you know, they could have gotten more out of him. But I do think in hindsight, they did. They maximized Chris Benoit better than almost anybody.
Yeah, I mean, you look at just another version of the same. God damn, I'm devolving into this way faster than we should be. But like Dean Malenko was right there with him. And Dean Malenko never got to the top and was the champion. And he was probably just as good mechanically in ring, but he wasn't as good, as I say, as a character. Crowds didn't get into him, and people didn't believe him beating Triple H or Shawn Michaels.
He was
Michaels,
a little less believable. He was shorter, and his body wasn't as good.
Right. So that's, I mean, like, that was it. So, like, I get what you're saying, Chris Benoit. Like, Eddie was obviously way more well-rounded. That type of match, that style of wrestling has really, for people like me and you, has gone out of favor, I think. And that has some pushback to do with, like, Dave Meltzer's opinions of wrestling. I think a lot of people go, like, well, I want to do other, like, stuff other than just spots in wrestling. I want to be emotionally invested. And you talking about how you care about, like, the storylines and stuff. And there's a lot of Benoit matches where you can watch them in context, out of context, and you get the same amount out of them either way. Because there isn't, like, a big story arc to them. So, so I totally agree with you. I think he was just of the moment very, very popular. But back to favorite murderers in wrestling. No, or I guess we could do rapists. No.
I had to look him up on Google, and I got this Quora result. Chris Benoit is the internet name of Chris Benoit. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, Benoit is the one that you said Benoit is pronounced Benoit.
Okay. Chris Benoit was a wrestling legend of his time. All his records were deleted by WWE after he committed triple murder, including suicide. One cannot even create Chris Benoit characters in WWE game. Therefore, his fans began referring to him as a mythical character who disappeared all of a sudden.
You searched the phonetic spelling of his last name.
I did.
That's why you're getting this. One that you said Benoit is actually pronounced Benoit and is the correct spelling of his name.
So that's why I didn't get a Wikipedia result.
Right, you're getting this. It's like Bork Laser or what's another like memeified name? Smooth or whatever.
Explain this to me. It says WWE has also done something similar to China due to porn career and Hulk Hogan due to racist comments. What happened to China? They didn't like that she had a...
I think more so than the porn, it was that she had levied some pretty harsh accusations toward people in the company when she left and then did porn. So they basically, and same thing with Benoit, they just don't really, you know, bring him up ever. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can still find China and Benoit matches on the network, but they don't, like, label things by them. They won't on TV be like, hey, remember China? Or like, hey, remember Chris Benoit? Like, they won't go out of their way to bring them up, essentially.
It sounds like revisionist history, though. You know what I mean? Like,
it is.
But why? Is. Why try to delete the truth?
So the reason I'm okay with it is because it's not real. And I know that people get mad because, like, well, all of wrestling's not real. But my argument would be Chris Benoit never won the championship. He was booked to win a championship. Like, these are not real accomplishments. So if you're ever going to revise history, this is essentially a fake television show. So I don't have an issue with that happening, because you're basically just changing the past of the universe that you've created. So I don't have too big of a problem with it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, like, Adrian, do you get upset that they don't do, like, honorific pieces about, I don't know,
like O.J. Simpson.
What's that? Like O.J. Like Simpson, yeah.
O.J. Simpson, yeah.
What do you mean? Because I watched the People versus O.J., and that was a great show, so...
No, yeah, but
I
mean, it wasn't like, honorific of O.J.
Yeah, like... Basically, what they're saying is that, like, there is a contingent of fans that think that, like, WWE should induct Chris Benoit into the Hall of Fame. And, do a thing, like, honoring him. Where, like, you would never see the NFL be like, let's take some time to go over O.J. Simpson and, like, talk about how good O.J. Simpson was. Like, that's mostly what the complaint was. Because WWE doesn't, like... They'll avoid talking about Chris Benoit in China.
But right.
It's mostly so that they don't, you know, do anything to give them glory.
Right, right. I get that part. But why not just, like, instead of deleting them entirely, create a separate web page?
They don't. Didn't delete them entirely, though. That's what I said. Like, you can still watch their matches.
What I'm saying is maybe have, like, a separate section called, you know, Fallen from Grace or something, and have, like, just those guys in it. You know what I mean? Just the guys.
That feels more disgusting.
What do you mean? Fallen from Grace? You're saying it right off the bat.
That's exploiting on it. That's sensationalism.
You think that's
what they're doing is they're treating them like people who didn't matter as much as they did at one point.
Yeah.
Because there's other wrestlers who, like, have the exact same treatment as Chris Benoit and China, but, like, no one gives a fuck because they were never popular.
What about the Hulk?
What about the Hulk?
So, like, I know he said racist stuff, but he did manage to basically bring Gawker down. Like, can we give him some credit for that? And just, you know, just ignore all the racist stuff.
Why does he deserve credit for that?
He was able to bring Gawker down, and Gawker was a terrible, you know, website. I mean,
this podcast produced by Peter Thiel.
Why was Gawker a terrible website? Give me a reason.
Didn't they say, like, what was it during the they were. During the whole, what was it called, the Fappening? Remember that whole incident with all the celebrity?
Yeah, no, they were very hypocritical.
They were very hypocritical. Sure. They said, you know, how all these people are sharing these pictures, blah blah blah. And then, like, when the Hulk Hogan tape surfaced or whatever, they're like, we're gonna fucking exploit the shit out of this and show everybody. Yeah. Like, wait a minute, you guys were all against the Fappening, but you're okay with leaking the Hulk Hogan sex tape? Like, that's highly hypocritical.
No, they did. So
they did. I know this.
Him. Yeah, the reason the lawsuit happened was because they were strongly anti-fappening, and, like, it's, you know, you shouldn't be looking at these pictures. And then they posted the Hulk Hogan sex tape because they were the ones that got their hands on it.
Yeah,
and they posted it, and their argument was that it's newsworthy.
By their same logic,
they should have then posted the fappening photos if that's what.
Yeah, that's a dick move to be against one thing but not against the other. You know what I mean?
Adrian, this is a bigger argument, honestly, because them being somewhat hypocritical about two different things doesn't necessarily mean that the website doesn't deserve to exist. Because everyone's
hypocritical. I'll agree with that, because I mean, I think that, and there was so much more that ended up being tied up into that lawsuit. It ended up being a much bigger lawsuit than anticipated because of the Peter Thiel involvement and things like that.
What was his involvement? What was his beef? Clearly, he had an axe to grind with Gawker,
and
right?
There's bigger political ramifications of this as well. Like, should we endorse and like the idea that a millionaire or a billionaire with an axe to grind can essentially put any media outlet out of business if they choose to?
If they're immoral and shady like Gawker, I don't see what
but you're putting that qualifier on it, but you can't control that. All you can control is, like, the basic idea that they're allowed to do this.
But it's obvious who you would be able to take down and who you wouldn't.
Gawker was not shut down because they posted the Hulk Hogan sex tape. The reason that Gawker was shut down is because Peter Thiel was mad that they said some mean things about him in an article one time.
Well, about being
so
gay.
So he gave
or something,
Hulk Hogan
right?
a bunch of money so that he could put them out of business, essentially.
Yeah, so what happens when this oil or coal asshole gets the Last Week Tonight with John Oliver taken off the air and possibly even destroys HBO because he's mad that they made fun of him for saying he talked to a squirrel?
That's not going
to
happen.
Is that fine?
It's not fine, but it's not going to happen. Peter Thiel's not going to be able to bring down, like, the New York Times or something. Because the New York Times has higher standards than a website.
You say
like
that, but the president is attacking the New York Times constantly. I mean,
what does that tell you? What does that tell you when the president doesn't like the New York Times? You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't like the New York Times.
It tells me that the highest office in the entire country has an axe to grind with a media outlet, so I'm pretty sure that they could be put out of business.
So
you're saying
that nobody should have the kind of power that Peter Thiel has in bringing down Gawker, is what you're saying?
I'm saying I'm not pro censorship through attacks this way. I'm not pro going after people because you have money and you don't like what they do, so you don't want them to have a voice. I don't think that that's what we're necessarily America's built on.
Okay, so in the case with Hulk Hogan and Gawker, where do you stand on that then? Because it sounds like you weren't really for the results of that whole, you know, that whole ordeal.
No, I wasn't. I don't think that Gawker should have gotten in trouble for posting that video. I don't care that they're hypocritical about the fappening. That doesn't matter to me. This kind of journalism has existed forever.
So you're okay with you're okay with them being against the fappening, right? Is what you're saying?
I am not okay with them being against the fappening and then okay with putting that video up. What I'm saying is it's not my judgment to then make that they shouldn't be allowed to exist because they made these choices.
I feel like you're walking a very fine line here, Tim.
My fine line is freedom of press.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't really consider them a legitimate. I didn't really consider them a legitimate. You
right,
know.
But who gets to decide what is and isn't legitimate?
Well,
that's the point.
In the case of Hulk Hogan and Gawker, obviously that was brought before a court. So the people got to decide that case, right?
Well, and just like we talked about O.J. Simpson earlier, if you have enough money and a good enough defense or a good enough prosecution team, you can sometimes influence things in a way that's not necessarily congruent with what the truth is.
That's true. I'll concede that point. You're right. In that situation, you are right. I agree. I don't know. I feel like
think that you and possibly even the people who made the decision in that court case, they made a value judgment saying, well, we don't like that Gawker is this way. We think that this is scuzzy, but that's not the basis to decide if they're allowed to be a journalistic publication. And even on top of just Gawker, the website, you're treating it as if it's a monolith, but there are people that worked at Gawker that were good people that are now out of work. There's people who may or may not have made those decisions that had to do with the fappening or even Hogan's taping out there, and now they're out of work and their names are disgraced because they work for that company. And you're saying, oh, I'm totally fine with that because Peter Thiel didn't like that company because they said something mean about him. That's totally cool.
I mean, people always say like, "Oh, these people will be out of work if this happens," but it's like they'll find other jobs. Like, there's no shortage. Yeah, there's no shortage of journalists.
A lot of those people did not like went into other fields and.
Yeah, and when you have that on your resume, it doesn't look good. Oh, you're coming from the place that got sued out of existence. I don't know if we can hire you.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true. I don't know. Maybe they could start their own blog or something and get like, you know, build up their own following with advertisers and whatnot. But
so they should have to start over.
Well, basically, yeah. I mean, it sucks. I think it's good. It sucks, but I mean, at least that's one less media outlet that's doing the kind of shady shit that Gawker was doing, right? Can you at least agree with that? You know,
because another one will just pop up.
Gawker like did have a lot of good stuff though. It's like, I don't know. Gawker was like a much bigger website than I think you're making it out to be. Like, there's a lot of different things on Gawker, well, and a lot of people got fucked over that shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And here's the other side of it too, Adrian. You say like that's one less media organization that's doing this shady shit, but it's not, because that audience is still there. And so what the next one will do is just like these alt-right guys are doing, like when they get kicked off of the mainstream web, they start going to other places where they know that they're not going to be as culpable. So now the next sensationalized media company will protect themselves and just be based out of Russia or another country where they won't have to answer for these things. And then that will embolden them to go even further, because they know that they don't have to worry about American laws.
Right. No,
it actually just makes it worse. It's a race to the bottom.
I mean, in the case of the alt-right stuff, I feel like they don't have a big enough of a following to really like have like an influence on any real change. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally.
They're huffing and puffing, but like these guys aren't writing the laws and making the decisions. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, totally. All right. Well, Maxwell.
Sorry for that tangent we went on.
Yeah, that was like, that's, and I mean, like, that's why I think it's a conversation that should be had. It's worth getting into.
But before we let you go, we do have to ask the final question.
Yes.
Which is, if someone only knew you from your podcast and wrestling commentary, what would be something that they find out about you that they would find shocking?
I mean, so I'm a pretty open book, so a lot of this is already out there. I was going to be an English teacher was something I think might surprise a lot of people.
Oh.
That is interesting.
That was I ended up majoring in sports management, but I had given a lot of consideration to becoming an English teacher.
Well, what about teaching English appeal to you?
I really like reading, and I like I mentioned earlier, I really like stories and things like that. My dad is like really good with grammar and stuff like that. So when I was in like middle school, I'd write like a paragraph like for like a homework assignment. My dad would be like, hey, let me see that. And then like put like red ink all over it and like tear it to shit. So I was like, oh God, like I'm an imbecile. And then like, I'd like rewrite it. And so like that, so I had really good grammar habits built into me. So I felt like that would be something that I could do pretty easily that I was passionate about. And then I went the sports management route. And then I, realized after I interned that like, that's, not the best field to get into at this point, cause it's super oversaturated and the hours are terrible. So I ended up just getting a normal business job that I have now, and it's fantastic. And I'm glad that I did what I did. So
yeah. And plus sports management, one of your clients might accidentally murder their entire family and skirt all responsibility.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't want to deal with like the legal ramifications of that.
And a lot of people don't realize that your stage name, Mark Maxwell, is actually Mark Twain Maxwell. So that's,
no. It's actually just my middle name and first name flipped. And I did that because Mark is my dad's name, and my dad's the one that got me into wrestling. So it's a tip of the hat to my dad was basically the main.
Does anyone ever say to you?
That's where that came from.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
you get that reference? You get that reference?
Yes.
Nice.
All about the room.
Nice. Oh, man, I wish we had more time. We could have talked about that anyway.
But we do not. So, Maxwell, before we let you go, what do you need to plug?
Yeah, check me out on the Twitter.com at MaxwellRBR. Check out my podcast, RBR Wrestling. It's the Twitter handle for that. And just type in RBR into iTunes. It'll come right up. It's a weekly podcast about wrestling and then just everything else. Like kind of like your show, too, where, like, you know, it'll... If other stuff comes up, we'll go down that route and talk about it, even if it's not wrestling related. It's a fun listen. It's a good kind of week to week show. It's mostly about WWE, but we're branching out now. We're covering New Japan and stuff like that as well. So check it out. And then we have the RBR Neighborhood Facebook group as well. So go check out those things. But mostly my Twitter.com account, MaxwellRBR.
Nice.
All right. Adrian, anything you need to plug before we go?
Just follow me at Della Boots. Follow us at Lucha and Dead. Check us out with the same user handles on Untappd. Follow what we're drinking, and that's it.
All right. Well, as always, the most important things in life are the three B's. And this week, I think the three B's are good Benoit's, good legal briefs, and definitely good banter. Good night, everybody.